Hi everyone, this is John Frank, editorial director of PL Buyer Magazine and Perishables Buyer Magazine, welcoming you to this latest podcast. With us today is Jay Forbes, president of the Forbes Connection, a New York-based chain and supplier consulting firm. Jay has dedicated his professional trade publishing career spanning more than four decades to tracking the fortunes of the food, drug, and mass market retailing sectors and the consumer goods supplier community. Jay is going to be discussing trends in the drugstore segment of the retailing world with us. He gave a fascinating presentation on the topic at last November's Private Label Manufacturers Association conference here in Chicago, and so we invited him to speak with us as well. Hi, Jay. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, John, and good hearing from you again.
Oh, great to have you with us. Let's begin by discussing the macro picture. What do you see ahead for drugstores, and particularly for their private label and their fresh food offerings in 2012? A lot of them are adding fresh food, which is a change from the past.
They are, and that question includes a lot, so let me try to break it down from the top.
Okay, fine.
From a macro perspective, John, it's interesting that Kantar Retail Group projects a steady 4.5% growth of the drug channel over the next 5 years, along with a jump in total share of retail food, drug, and mass sales to 18.4%. And this is quite impressive versus a formidable competitive situation from the drugstore, from the dollar stores, and the supercenter channels. So in looking at some of the reasons for this, we can credit several factors. I think first it's important to note that Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid together account for about 95% of all front-end product sales in the entire drug channel. And certainly the fact that the three major drug chains are also accounting for about 50% of all retail scripts makes them the beneficiary of a built-in traffic driver. Now, with over 20,000 stores operated by these same three chains, convenience also favors this channel, particularly in a recessionary economy, which discourages long trips to one-stop shopping formats that only burn gasoline and take considerably more of the customer's time. And we know that 75% of drugstore customers actually shop within 5 miles of their homes.
Really?
And that drug chains already function as logical outlets for necessity items, last-minute seasonal gifts, and fill-in snacks and beverages that they will purchase in between their family's major weekly grocery shopping trip. So if I may go on from here, according to Nielsen, drug chains now enjoy a 79% household penetration. Customer visits are a little better than one per month. And dollar takeaway is about $25 on the average visit. But, of course, scripts are factored into that. So if you back that out, you've got about $15 of that ring actually coming from the front end of the store. And another major factor that's impacting here is loyalty card usage, which is now a major factor in the drug chain industry. Early adopter CVS leads the pack with 69 million loyalty card users. Rite Aid, with its wellness card, is fast-tracking at 44 million in a very short period of time since they introduced that card. And Walgreens will be rolling national in the fall of 2012 and actually is aiming at 70 million loyalty customers in its first full year of operation.
Wow.
Now, that's all the good news. If we move to one of the challenges in the drug channel, it's the fact that 46% of their shoppers come from households earning less than $50,000 a year. So as high-low retailers, the pressure is continuously on them to offer value and convenience. And, of course, private label is the trifecta. It anchors loyalty, it provides value pricing for the customer, and gives the chain better margin. So given that, let's talk about the private label portion, which is, I believe, included in your question.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So consequently, because of private label's positioning, every one of the three major drug chains is now engaged in aggressively growing their private label and their exclusive brand offerings. But each of the three are at different points in that process. Walgreens, for example, began early with look-alike products of excellent quality and directed most of their initial efforts to the OTC category. And they've grown rapidly since that time, expanding across the floor to include virtually every category in that store. Mm-hmm. And, of course, with the acquisition of Duane Reade, John, their success with lines like Delish and other private label entries now have developed into a full-blown department at Walgreens of 55 dedicated individuals specifically aimed at tripling the growth of private label within the next few years. Their packaging really has been state-of-the-art, and their growth in the snacks and consumables category has been extraordinary. They have stated that they are transitioning from private label to what they refer to as private brand. Now, overall, 75% of the households now shopping Walgreens say that they buy private label, and that spans 30 categories of the store.
Wow.
And it's amazing. And private label currently represents about 20% of their front-end mix and about 25% of their gross margin dollars. Moving on, CVS really has been no slouch in this area either, boasting over 17% of its mix currently in private label or exclusive brands. And you'll know some of these brands, such as Lumine, which they brought in from abroad, and more recently, Nuance, which has been a tremendous success, Nuance by Salma Hayek,
yes,
the actress. They also introduced Just the Basics, which is an opening price point private label line of 100 essentials last year. And they've been most aggressive in bringing food items, branded and private label, to the front of the store. They've just done an outstanding job, as far as I'm concerned, in items such as cereals and the bottled water and snacks, and selectively, depending on the store, in fresh and perishables as well.
Mm-hmm.
And to conclude the private label portion of your question, Rite Aid, with fewer resources and burdened by considerable debt, has nevertheless begun to reinvest in its store layouts, freshen its mix, and revitalize its private label offerings. And they're attempting to get their private label mix up from what is now about 17%. So that is kind of my take on private label, and that leaves the last part of your opening question. And sorry for the ramble.
All-encompassing question. No, you're doing fine.
The all-encompassing question. But we now talk about fresh. And drug chains are quite excited about extending their mix to include fresh. And the reason for it is they know that the high quality of what they can bring to the store, and if they can get access to locally purchased offerings, organic product, etc., will engender a high loyalty amongst their customers, and it'll bring new footsteps to their store. So most of these chains see opportunity in what is now referred to as food deserts. Those are areas lacking a lot of convenience food outlets or superettes or supermarkets. And Walgreens, again, was an early adapter in the area of fresh. John, you know, I can remember my surprise at finding bananas hung from the ceiling and other fruits and vegetables strategically offered in a suburban Deerfield store not far from their headquarters. And that was 15 years ago, way before perishables really emerged as a consideration by this channel. So if we look at it and bring it forward today, Walgreens is projecting over 1,000 food and fresh oases, that's what they call their units, within the next 5 years. CVS has what they call an urban cluster concept, and those stores are similarly targeting fresh and and ready-to-eat offerings, and they're projecting 1,400 such stores in high population density markets. And finally, Rite Aid's customer world formats, which they've had around a while but really haven't proliferated, and now their newly designed health-centric drugstores are concentrating not just on OTCs and wellness, but have incorporated food as a major component of their overall wellness presentation.
Wow.
So I think, hopefully, that answers the three components of your first question.
Do you think they can make money with these food desert stores?
Okay. I think that in the battle against the supermarkets, they're winning this battle easily. Given their previously referred to convenience and willingness to price aggressively, but they are not alone against supermarkets in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Dollar stores are expanding their food offerings rapidly,
yes,
and all you have to do is take a look at Dollar General's rapid rollout from 5 stores in Vegas to 40 new DG Market stores that will be moving into areas across the country featuring dry groceries and perishables. And they intend to position these stores in metro and rural food deserts and are estimating $4 to $5 million annual dollar volume per store versus their now $1.4 million average store volume.
Wow. Wow.
So I predict some real headbanging in these markets in the near future.
So they're not going to be deserts much longer from that.
That's correct.
Everyone seems to
be well ordered.
That's right. I mean, they're going to be a lot of smaller format grocery stores as well that different retailers are moving into these areas as well. So it's going to be pretty
correct.
Competitive, isn't it?
It
sounds like you think the drugstores can hold their own and do well.
More than hold their own. I think that selectively, by market, that these types of formats that I mentioned are going to have real grab because they're filling needs. And, you know, if we go back historically, I can still remember Arbor Drug in Michigan putting food and even perishables in selectively in some very, very well-run stores that are now owned by CVS, by the way. And they only placed those food and perishables products in areas where they were bereft of any real food providers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at this selectively, I think they'll do quite well.
And as you mentioned before, they have the location, so when they're trying to capture the quick trip, they're in the right place for that, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got 20,000 stores out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they can take any portion of them, just as they're doing with the Minute Clinic on the pharmacy side,
mm-hmm.
and only put it in where it's justified.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you've been talking about Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid, sort of the big three. Are they going to be the big three by the end of the year, or is Rite Aid?
Oh, yeah. There's no emerging drug force. Serious competitor in that field. They will continue to be the big three, or what I call the big two and a half. We'll talk about some changes that might occur later on in this conversation, possibly. As far as the three of them are concerned, they will dominate the landscape, fighting the drug panel.
I was going to say, talk about the changes. Can Rite Aid remain independent, or do you think Walgreens or CVS might try and gobble them up?
Well, if you're talking about major acquisitions overall, I think neither Walgreens nor CVS is in the hunt at this time. They're much more concerned with managing their inventory, bringing new formats and new product mix, such as perishables, for example, and fresh, to the fore, and moving ahead with their digital technology and all the other things that are changing the landscape of the business. But that would not preclude the strategic acquisition of a small but solid regional player, because there are plenty of them out there, and the game gets tougher and tougher for them as the larger retailers dominate. When you talk about Rite Aid, that's another story. With their most recent experimental wellness model, and the expected improvement in pharmacy traffic that will probably be beneficiaries of as a result of Walgreens ending its relationship with Express Scripts, so a lot more pharmacy customers might be coming their way. I would think Rite Aid could continue as currently constituted, but logic would dictate that at some point in the near future, they might choose to part with their West Coast division, which would provide a badly needed capital influx that they need to rapidly roll out their much improved formats and to pay down their debt. So that would not surprise me. I believe there's some 800 or so stores on the West Coast. The culture has always been a bit different, West Coast to East Coast, and the acquirer would probably not come from the drug channel. It would probably be from a private investor or from abroad or even from another channel. There have been rumors in the past that Walmart has made a bid for those stores.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. That'll be something to watch.
Yes.
Okay, Jay, I'm afraid our time is starting to run a bit short here, so maybe it's a good time for you to review key trends for 2012 and let our listeners know what the most important takeaways from our discussion should be for them.
I sure will. I just want to, if I may, just give a postscript to a question that might be on your mind, and that is, can the drug chain successfully bring in perishables?
Yeah, it's a whole different handling issue.
Yeah, and you know what? I have a very quick response to that. John, a lot depends on the logistics needed to broaden that mix and the complexity and cost of attempting that. And there's also a danger of muddying their identity if they get too far into that. And of course, there's the danger of adding expensive store personnel to manage it. I know in perishables, spoilage is a major issue. And probably there are a dozen other issues that you can tell me about and educate me about that I just can't comment on intelligently. So I think that question, has to be a wait and see. But I don't see anybody, you know, full-fledged moving ahead in the drug channel to become a major perishables or fresh purveyor. They're more comfortable in consumable snacks, and if they can add a little bit of differentiation with organic fresh, I think they'll do so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I can get to your last question,
yes,
which is just a handful of trends that I see, I think store brands are going to continue to be aggressively promoted, and they will grow. And exclusive brand a percentage of that mix will continue to escalate based on the need of the drug chain to offer value pricing while retaining margin and building loyalty. I think you're going to have a much higher expectation of innovation from private label suppliers, not just knockoffs. I think quality standards are going to be more demanding. I think packaging standards are going to be much more demanding in terms of consumer friendliness. And I also see no abatement of food continuing to drive the major growth of store brands, not only in drug, but across multiple channels. I think the pressure is going to be heavily on secondary and third-tier branded products. And unless those products are extremely innovated or differentiated, you're going to see them radically trimmed from the mix. You'll have the big boys who can support major launches and the private label alternative and very little in between, unless those brands bring real innovation to the game. And the pressures are going to continue on all drug chains, and in fact all chains, to reduce non-productive inventory. A few last points.
Sure.
I think chains will continue to try in this economy to balance their value pricing and promotion at the shelf with margin retention. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing going on today. And how can you selectively offer value, lower price, and still not erode your margins, particularly if you're a public chain? And I think you're going to find chains increasingly resistant to absorbing manufacturer price increases. increases and increasingly reluctant to take really deep discounts to increase those sales.
Mm-hmm. How many loss leaders can they afford, really?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And finally, John, I think the most exciting thing is the digital revolution. Mm. I think mobile point-of-sale tablets like iPads and HP Solutions are going to be implemented by chains to deliver a more personalized shopping experience to customers. I think it's going to allow in-store personnel to actually complete transactions anywhere in the store, and they will be able to check product availability in real time. They'll be able to tell customers what styles and colors are available. They'll be able to track orders. They'll be able to do multiple tasks, which will allow the customer more shopping time, because so far early research has indicated that those shoppers that are using their mobile phones to accomplish some of this are taking that saved time to actually stay in the store longer, which is very interesting. So look for chains to upgrade mobile retail websites and enhance mobile loyalty programs. And there are probably a dozen other things that I could mention, but I think those will be the driving forces going forward.
Okay.
And I hope that some of the information that I've imparted to you today can be of use to your readers and those that will access the webinar. And I want to thank you for reaching out and calling.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it, as I did your speech at PLMA. You're a font of information and insights. And I think the your last point on the mobile technology could be the subject of a whole other podcast, because there's something happening in that area.
Totally, but it won't be me.
No, okay.
I still have trouble figuring out, though, why my car starts when I turn the keys. So.
Well, I bought a Prius last year, so I have no key anymore, which is it's a whole another level of complexity to get the car to start. So,
that's got
to
be my next purchase.
Well, thanks, Jay, for joining us. As I said, we're out of time, but I want to thank you and our listeners and invite them to listen to all our PL Buyer and Perishable Buyer podcasts by visiting our two websites, privatelabelbuyer.com and perishablebuyer.com, where you can listen to and or download these podcasts and listen to them at your leisure. Thanks again, Jay. Great to have you with us. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John. And just one last thing. If your listeners want to learn more about my company and myself, they can reach me at jayj@ForbesConnection.com, and you can access my website.
That'd be great. I'm glad you added that. And tell them a bit about what services you provide.
Most of it is connecting services. So if a manufacturer is looking for any type of resources, whether it be brokers to sell their line or a PR agency recommendations or looking for funding or a whole potpourri of services, that's what I do. I'm not truly a consultant. I'm more a connector in this business. And if they need any information on the business, they also can find that on the website and actually order the industry overview, which I provide on the entire business.
Oh, great. And so tell them the website one more time.
It's www.ForbesConnection.com. And I believe that's it. I should know it better, but
it's the online course.
I believe that's correct.
Yes. I'm just looking at your, that's it. I'm looking at your business card, which I have here. All right, great. Well, thanks again. Great to have you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I hope we meet up again, and I look forward to doing this at another time.
Great. Thanks again, and goodbye to our listeners. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.